Hi, this is Zoe.
And this is Justina.
And this is the Empowered Healing Podcast.
So today's episode is going to be about living in the age of misinformation.
Ooh.
It is wild, the world that we are living in right now, and it feels really surreal, right? That it's information overload and we don't even know what the truth is.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's just a constant nonstop. And I've even heard it called the post-truth era.
Oh.
Yeah.
So post-apocalyptic.
It is.
Ugh, this is the world we are living in.
Yeah, but I think it goes to show how impactful this currently is on our lives and how big this misinformation thing is.
Yeah, and just how much it is impacting the mental health of so many people.
Oh my gosh, and in so many ways.
So many ways. Yeah.
So many ways.
I know I have clients coming in that have been significantly impacted. How about you?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're all on social media, right? And it influences so much of what we do.
Oh, yeah. It is such a pervasive part of our lives. You know, it's no surprise that we turn to social media for everything, especially our news. I recently saw an article that quoted, it was like 54% of all Americans use social media for news. And I think that number is a lot higher.
I think that number is a lot higher, too. I do. I unfortunately myself get a lot of news from social media.
Me too. I think we all kind of do it. Yeah. It's quick.
Yeah.
It's streamlined. And it's tailored to you.
Right, right. But that also is part of the danger. So we can talk about some of that too, is that it's tailored to us, so we are seeing kind of what we want to see, right?
Yeah. And it kind of builds on that sense of confirmation bias where you're that tendency to confirm the things that we already believe in.
Yeah.
And it creates these sort of echo chambers where, you know, we feel like this is the reality, this is the truth of the world.
Yeah.
Like, okay, all these people are in alignment with me on my beliefs, my values, what truth even is.
Right, right. And it becomes easy to feel very polarized that way too.
Oh, 100%. Algorithms obviously play a role in that too.
Yeah. Which we can go down a whole rabbit hole about that, too, right? About the different things, different guardrails that used to be around to protect us from some misinformation, and that's recently been rolled back.
Yeah, which is scary.
It's really scary.
To be quite honest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You don't know what to actually trust, especially in social media world.
Mm-hmm. And that it's, you know, like you had said earlier, we're being bombarded by information constantly. Like, some of us don't have the mental energy to go and meticulously comb through everything that we're digesting.
Right.
Sometimes it's easier to just be like, okay, like, this is what it is.
Yeah.
It's from, my algorithm is obviously recommending it to me for a reason.
Yeah.
Like, it's easier just to say, like, okay, this is the truth.
Yeah, yeah.
Which isn't necessarily the case on both ends of polarity.
Yeah, absolutely. And where does the truth actually lie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, philosophers would say, what even is truth?
What even is truth? Oof. What is truth? That's a great question.
It's a hard one.
Yeah. I want to roll back to confirmation bias. Can you say a little bit more about what that is for folks who might not know?
Yeah. So confirmation bias is this tendency to seek out information that confirms already existing beliefs. This could be political beliefs, moral, ethical, really anything. And we see it a lot on social media. Our algorithms are tailored to us and based on what we engage with. And a lot of times we engage with stuff that aligns with us in all of those ways.
Mm-hmm. Which seems like it would be good that, hey, we see the things that we like, right?
Yeah.
But what about in, let's say, the current political climate, that maybe I want to know a little bit more about how others are feeling. So how would I even go about trying to find that information?
Yeah, it's hard. You have to actively seek it out, and you don't necessarily trust the information that you're seeing.
Right.
Because it works both ways. Not only do you get a stronger sense of your own personal convictions,
mm-hmm.
but that sense of distrust in the quote-unquote other side, too.
Right, right. It's wild.
It is wild.
It is.
Yeah. and how, you know, misinformation, especially as you kind of talked about, like, the political climate has been, like, weaponized on both sides.
Yes, it has. And some of that has serious implications for people's lives, people's health.
Yeah.
There is some scary stuff that's happening now as a result.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Don't even get me started. There are, you know, like, real world complications, like you said. Like, it has severe consequences. I mean, we've seen it with RFK Jr. and his campaign against, like, psychiatric medication.
Right.
You know, his false claims that, you know, they can be as addictive as heroin, when, in fact, a large issue we see in our work is, like, medication compliance. Like, right. Clients not wanting to take their meds.
Yeah, yeah. Medication compliance is a huge hurdle in mental health.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk specifically about people but people dealing with depression. It's really difficult for people to break down the barriers and stigma, even with taking medication, because the stigma around, oh, there's something wrong with you that you need this.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there's no shame in needing something to balance out your brain chemistry. You know, that's no fault of their own. Yeah. And to have somebody in such a position of power to say, like, hey, these things aren't effective, they aren't helpful, they're harmful.
Yeah.
When these things have, in fact, saved lives,
yeah.
They've been researched meticulously and combed through of, like, hey, these are safe and effective.
Right.
It's a real problem.
Yeah. Decades of research.
Decades of research.
Yeah.
Just, what, out the window for some people?
A lot of people, I guess.
Yeah. And it's tough, again, because going back to that idea of echo chambers, like, we get stuck in a certain frame of reference on social media.
Yeah.
And it seems truthful. It seems like the reality. And so it's not like people are intentionally being malicious. Mm-hmm. You know, if you see somebody who maybe believes that, of like, okay, somebody in a position of authority said that these are harmful, and that you see that on social media everywhere.
Right.
Like, that feels true.
Yeah. Yeah. When in reality, anything can be harmful to someone.
Yeah.
There's people in the world who are allergic to water.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
And it's grass. And grass.
Pollen, you know?
Right.
We live in a very pollinated area.
Like, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
It is the season right now.
It is. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But with, like you said, medication compliance is really tough for people with mental health struggles. So they're already dealing with shame and stigma of taking the medication to begin with a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And when they start taking it and it is helping them feel better, they want to continue taking it, but there can be so many barriers between insurance and all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you start receiving messaging from mass media and, like you said, people in power telling you that that's bad, that is a struggle.
Yeah, it provides pause for a lot of clients, you know?
Yeah, should I be taking this?
Yeah, and there are a lot of clients who are already ambivalent about it, who are like, I don't know, it seems like it could be helpful, and I don't know if I necessarily trust it. Because there's already been a lot of, I guess, conflicting or mixed feedback on medication in general. Some people have heard, you know, bad stories from people in their lives who have had issues with certain medications. But then there are people who, you know, again, like, it saves lives. And
absolutely.
So, you know, taking the political climate out of it, you know, just anecdotally, people are on the fence about it.
Right.
And to have that extra layer causes a lot of pause for people.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah.
This is where we are.
Yeah.
This
is and where we are. Unfortunately, this isn't even the only thing that's impacting people right now.
It's not. That is a drop in the bucket of misinformation right now that we are wading through.
Yeah.
Just trying to think about how we got here, because I'm envisioning pre-COVID. Or even pre-Donald Trump presidency, what the world looked like as far as discourse.
Yeah, and it's strange to think about, because it was not even 10 years ago, and I feel like the world is completely different now, especially as far as, like, discourse or how we handle conflict.
Right.
I feel like it's changed so much in media, where it's so polarized and...
Right.
You know, the other side is the enemy.
Right.
And that there is really no middle ground anymore. that middle yeah. ground is few and far between.
Right.
When it wasn't always that way. Mm-hmm. I think, like you said, like especially pre-2016 election,
mm-hmm.
you know, unfortunately, that election caused a lot of issues for our society.
It did. It did. And thinking about how all of the swing into significant misinformation started, right? That we start with the term fake news.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. That was really, you know, a big, big thing on Trump's campaign is this idea of fake news, where he really began to weaponize misinformation.
Right.
Or information in general. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he really used fake news as it really meant anyone who was in defiance of him or his ideals and what he was pushing.
Right.
And so, you know, one of his big targets back in that election was like CNN or other similar news sources
sure.
of your fake news.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's all it took mm-hmm. is him saying your fake news and people start discrediting news.
Right, right.
It's like, okay, what even is truth at that point then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just seeing the quick downhill trajectory of people's ability to really go out and seek other information.
Yeah. Yeah. Or to have those conversations with other people and try to get that information.
Yeah.
Because that, again, that idea of fake news, like somebody can just throw that at you in discourse of like, oh, that's just fake news.
Right.
And what
right.
are you supposed to do with that?
Yeah. Well, not even a decade later, we went from fake news to alternative facts.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's just wild.
Just that term, right? Alternative facts.
Yeah. It's like, what is that supposed to mean?
Because for me, as someone who does research, facts are facts. Data tells the story.
Yeah.
Like, especially if it's done correctly and done well, or if it's something that is repeated multiple times. Mm-hmm. We have a pretty good idea that facts are facts.
Yeah,
so this idea of introducing alternative facts.
It's like, what does that even entail? You know, like you said, like facts are evidence-based. They're researched.
Right.
They point to a clear, it's either it looks like this or not this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I frequently see people on social media using the term do your own research.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Double-edged sword.
It is. It really is. So tell me about, let's say we're doing research on a topic in the internet. Let's talk about media literacy. So mm-hmm. understanding media and researching perhaps alternative views to the things that we see on our own social media feeds.
Yeah, so researching alternative views.
Trying to look at, you know, where is this information coming from?
Yeah. Right?
What is the source?
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of times it often isn't something that's been fact-checked or, you know, I feel like influencers have a big hand in that. You know, they're
Absolutely.
Very popular.
Absolutely.
The fact that, you know, again, even 10 years ago, influencers weren't such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And today, like, they're so widespread.
Right.
And you see that a lot, and people put trust in that, same way they put trust in celebrities.
Yeah, yeah.
And
why do you think that is?
I feel like part of it is people feel heard and seen by influencers and celebrities.
Yeah.
Like, okay, like, this person gets me.
Uh-huh.
But really, it's the ideal of that person.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily the person.
Right.
You know, influencers, it's in their title. They influence people based on specific content.
Right, right. And the disconnect that is likely there between the way somebody who is taking in all of this content on social media from influencers and celebrities and how they live their lives versus how a celebrity presents things to them or how an influencer might present information to them.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes it's, you know, very sensational the way they give these news. And
mm-hmm.
unfortunately, that's exactly what social media wants and thrives off of.
Right.
Is, you know, the algorithms that a lot of social media platforms use are
engagement-driven. Yeah, yeah.
They don't care for critical thought or fact-checking.
No.
That's not what generates the revenue. It's not what increases foot traffic. You know, it's what gets the most views,
right.
what gets shared often, what has the most likes.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter about the truth in the situation. It's what's the most appealing and what's going to turn a buck.
Yeah, yeah. And engagement isn't even just positive things. So it's not just the people that are agreeing with an influencer talking about, we can go down the road of influencers who are talking about additives in food and how things are so bad for people.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, maybe true, but also how much is this being amped up? How much is it being really sold?
Yeah, kind of back to that idea of like a middle ground. There used to be more of a middle ground where you could point that out of like, hey, maybe additives aren't a great thing. You know, we're in a dye-free household, whatever the thing is.
Sure.
We don't have to sensationalize it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, again, social media does so good at that emotionally driven content.
That's a great point.
Yeah. And, you know, that's what we engage with, you know?
Yeah.
It triggers that system in our brain that likes and seeks reward.
Yeah.
You know, social media is a dopamine trap.
Right.
Just constant, quick dopamine.
Yeah.
I mean, think about the way Vine exploded when it first came out. These quick 6-second videos.
Yes.
Now it's on every platform.
It is. The average video length that people watch on the internet right now is 35 seconds max.
Yeah, which is crazy.
So you can hold somebody's attention span for an average of 35 seconds to get your message across.
Yeah. If you're trying to be deliberate about news, you're trying to engage that critical thought, it's going to take a lot more than 35 seconds.
Right, That 35 seconds is good for getting a good, strong reaction out of someone, though.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And again, drive up that engagement.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh. So even if I don't want to interact with content that I think is sensationalized or necessarily, maybe not completely the truth, how can I use something like media literacy to find things that are factual? What do reliable sources look like?
Yeah, so reliable sources are often peer-reviewed. They come from certain sites, like .org sites tend to be a good one. You know, checking the credentials of who's actually posting the sources. Because something can look very official.
Yeah.
Again, like even like a .org. Taking that extra step to actually look into what this organization's about, what they're posting about, what their process is. And again, the unfortunate reality is that people don't necessarily have the mental energy to go and do that a lot of times, which is why this is such a problem right now.
Right.
You know, and not only that, but there's like an emotional component to like the quick news, especially you said earlier that it's not all like positive things too. You see really scary stuff on the internet.
Yeah.
And a lot of times misinformation serves to give a sense of clarity because it's so quick and direct.
Sure.
And it kind of eases that fear or uncertainty that people tend to feel.
The amount of information too that comes at you.
Oh yeah.
Notifications coming from everywhere. It's just an onslaught all of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do we put up boundaries around that so we don't feel so overwhelmed?
Yeah. Like taking intentional breaks every single day from social media. But using do not disturb, because most of us have it on our phones.
Right.
No.
Right.
Choosing to intentionally step back from that, give ourselves some space. And I think also finding ways to supplement some of the quick dopamine we get from social media. There's a book I read called Dopamine Nation.
Yeah.
It talks about more like that slow dopamine and how to get more of it. It could be very interesting for people to, you know, research other ways, because social media is only going to continue to be more addictive, more engaging. And again, like, if that's where we're getting our news from, we're going to continue to fall in these traps of confirmation bias, finding echo chambers that, you know, kind of blur the truth or the reality of the situation, because in reality, everything is so gray. Nothing is as black and white as it seems.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that seems much easier to say it's this or this, right? But how often is it actually black or white? Yes or no? A clear delineation between one way or another?
Very, very little, if at all.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And that's also a lot of energy to determine, okay, where do I land in this issue? Do I lean completely this way or this way? Or is it okay for me to kind of take a little bit of both?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, again, that moderate stance. And I feel like pre-2016, there were a lot of people in that moderate space, mm-hmm. you know, maybe they believed some things about one side versus the other, and mm-hmm. they could come to their own sense of what reality was for them.
Right.
And, you know, I think as a society, we need to get back to that middle ground.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's such a hard thing when social media propagates this idea of extremism on both sides. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to find that middle ground, or it's hard to for people to feel like they have the agency to have conversations with people who have diverse viewpoints or right. opposing ideals
right.
and not to take it as an attack.
Well, like we mentioned earlier, everything is so emotionally charged
mm-hmm.
that it's so hard to feel like you come into those conversations from a calm place.
Yeah. Yeah, or even that ability just to find the common humanity in a situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's a great tip. They're trying to consider the humanity of the situation.
Yeah, and that, you know, you can see that other person as somebody with this extreme set of ideals, and this is a person with an entire life history.
Mm-hmm.
They got here in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Like being able to empathize or at least understand that
right.
can
right.
help. And it's hard when maybe one person's open in the conversation, another isn't. And that's not going to be every single person you talk to.
No.
That there is hope true. And that you can have this dialogue with people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And a lot of these ideas around misinformation have been so not only emotionally charged, but morally driven, right?
That oh, absolutely.
These are your set of morals. This is what you should believe.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, on the moral front, the increased, presence of, like, religion mm-hmm. in, like, our political climate
mm-hmm.
really, like, bolsters that sense of morality extremism.
Yeah.
On both really. Sides of, like, oh, like, this is, these principles or whatever it is are, like, very morally wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like, it's that such black and white thinking.
Right.
How do you convince somebody that, you know, what you believe in isn't, like, pure evil?
Yeah.
Because a lot of times that's how it comes off is, you know, you look at social media and all the rhetoric you see on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
It's not very positive.
It's not. It's not. And there's so much fear.
Fear is everywhere. And I think
everywhere.
That's part of what drives the content, that emotionally driven response.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's not even just the rage or the joy or the quick entertainment. It is that piece that people genuinely feel very afraid all across the aisle, right? That
yeah.
For so many different reasons, from mm-hmm. whatever messaging that's being filtered to them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's important to remember the hopefulness of the situation, even when times feel as dark as they do now,
yeah.
that there's always a chance for a better future, for less of this, this crazy climate that we're in.
Yeah.
And I think a big part of that starts with people being more intentional about how they're engaging with social media.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, what tips do you have with engaging with social media? How can we make more mindful choices?
Yeah. I think being aware of the people you're following, you know, are they sending specific messages? Do they have a strong rhetoric about one thing or another?
Mm-hmm.
Making sure you're following, like, diverse viewpoints. Mm-hmm. If you're using social media for news.
Yeah.
Make sure you're getting both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
it's very easy to fall into that trap of just seeing one thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, falling into that confirmation bias.
Mm-hmm.
So intentionally going the extra step to see diverse sources.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good point.
Yeah. You can also hide and report false information on social media, which I think is huge.
Yeah.
If you're on it anyways and you see it and you recognize it as something that's false or even, like, hurtful or harmful, you can report it. Like, you
that's
have that
true.
Power. Everyone has that power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whether it actually gets taken down is a whole other story.
Right. That's what I was just thinking. That I felt like maybe when I reported those things previously, say a year ago, that maybe they were more fully considered than they are right now.
Yeah, and I think that's an unfortunate reality of, you mentioned earlier on that we've started to see a rollback on some of those safety measures of, you know, the diligence in checking truthfulness and whether something is fake.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When those are rolled back, like, it's up to you,
right,
to really, right, do something about it.
Right. Well, and how much of this is automated? So how many of us does it take to say, all right, we have to go out of our way to mark this thing as misinformation so that it flags and somebody actually seriously reviews this thing?
Yeah, and, you know, that's the answer is nebulous. We don't really know.
Right.
But if you think about when people come together,
mm-hmm,
like, results happen. I mean, just as recently as, like, the end of February, there's that economic boycott.
Mm-hmm.
People not buying anything that day, especially, mm-hmm, from big companies that have been rolling back DEI. That was the main mission.
Right.
There is a significant impact.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, really, the power is in the people. It's up to you, not only to do these things on social media, but to encourage others as well.
Yeah.
You know, friends, family. I'm sure we all have somebody who relies on social media maybe a little too much.
Yes.
Talk absolutely. To that person.
Yeah.
You know, have a conversation with them of, like, okay, like, what does it look like to be more mindful on, mm-hmm, social media?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because it's so easy to just scroll.
Oh, the doom scroll.
And mindlessly consume.
Yeah.
And I think it's an escapism that we all use time and again, you know, every now and then.
Yeah.
And for some people who maybe it is a little more of a frequent habit,
mm-hmm,
that can be harmful to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And from a mental health perspective, I talk about this a lot with clients about avoidance of things that feel harmful or feel overwhelming. And that is certainly helpful and healthy to put up boundaries around those things. But, and also being able to check out sometimes when everything feels so overwhelming. But being intentional about, what does that checking out look like?
Yeah, because that brings up an interesting point with doom scrolling as that form of checking out, because you're mentally checking out from, like, the current moment,
mm-hmm,
but you're still getting that information that, because inevitably it's going to pop up on your feed,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Yeah.
Either for or against whatever issue,
mm-hmm,
that you're thinking about right now. Right. And then you get on a long-winded scroll about that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then really, was that productive? Was that restful for you? Probably not. So, mm-hmm, finding ways to check out, but in, like, mindful ways. Like,
right.
Find a hobby that you really enjoy.
Yeah.
Something that's, like, easy and stimulating. I mean, I have clients who color. Like, mm-hmm, I've told them to go out and buy coloring books and just sit there and do it.
Yep.
And they love it.
Yeah,
put on music in the background. Something that feels inviting or calm or happy, mm-hmm, something productive for them.
Right. Yeah, I love coming up with go-to playlists. All right, this is a playlist I'm going to put on when I'm feeling overwhelmed and I know that it sparks joy for me or that it allows me to move my body a little bit. Even that little bit of intentional shift can be so helpful.
Yeah, and even applying that to social media, like you said, like, mm-hmm, with clients and music, a lot of times we have that knee-jerk reaction to feed into the emotion that we're feeling.
Yeah.
So a client who's maybe feeling heartbroken over a recent breakup,
mm-hmm,
listens to a bunch of sad breakup songs.
Yeah.
And while they feel validated and heard,
mm-hmm,
it also perpetuates and exacerbates the sad feelings that they're experiencing.
Yeah.
The same thing can happen on social media with, like, mm-hmm, you know, whatever the specific news is that you're engaging with, whatever topic it is.
Right.
You know, you can focus on, like, the good parts, the positive parts, or you could focus on the negative of, like, okay, like, this really seems like level 10 disaster, like, doomsday prepping, like,
right.
whatever it is. Like, you can really get stuck in that. And so if you notice that you're starting to see trends in your social media, being able to take a step back.
Right.
Okay, is this something that's helping me?
Yeah.
Am I getting another perspective? Is this all I'm seeing?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is this helpful that this is all I'm seeing?
Yeah. And I'm also wondering about the intentionality of, okay, I'm scrolling on social media, I'm spending some time on here, and maybe checking in with how I'm feeling while I'm doing that.
Yeah, I think that's such a huge thing that we don't do, especially going back to the idea that people use social media as a way to mentally clock out.
Totally.
That also means clocking out from what they're feeling,
mm-hmm,
of they just mindlessly scroll, and I think that's, mm-hmm, a great idea. you know, if you catch yourself watching something, mm-hmm. being able to take a step back of like, okay, like, what am I feeling in this moment?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, it's easier said than done, and it takes intentionality and practice.
Right.
And we're all capable of it.
We are.
We're all capable of being able to tune into how we're feeling, mm-hmm. relating to the content that we're digesting.
Yeah, yeah. I'm wondering how difficult it would be for people. I know it'd be difficult for me to take a pause before I click on the Facebook icon on my phone and think about, all right, how am I feeling right now?
Yeah.
And is me logging on here potentially going to make me feel any worse than I'm already feeling?
Yeah, especially when it's so automated in our lives at this point.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in graduate school for my addictions class, we had to choose one thing to get rid of for a couple of months, and I chose social media.
Yeah.
The way I would immediately reach for my phone and try to open an app that wasn't there was alarming to me.
Right?
It was every day, multiple times a day.
Yeah.
And I think that just goes to show how much work you have to put in to be intentional about those things.
Right, right.
But the good thing is there's also apps to help us with this. You know,
that's true.
I've downloaded on my own apps that you can add whatever social media apps that you want it to pay attention to, and it'll have you do a puzzle or check in with yourself or ask yourself, what's the point of opening this app before you can actually open it?
Yeah, that is awesome. That is something we should include in the show notes. We'll put that app in there because that is really important to, hey, this is an easy tool that we can download and set up in probably less than 5 minutes.
100%. And it's just that little extra step.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, you may still open the app, and it got you to think for 3 seconds before you did it.
Yeah.
You were that much more intentional.
Yeah.
And that's the goal at the end of the day.
It is.
Even just being 1% more intentional every day is mm-hmm. going to lead to like a big change mm-hmm. in the long term.
Yeah.
It's that commitment to that 1%.
Absolutely. There's so much power just in that intentionality.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. In a world where we don't get a lot of opportunity to slow down.
No, we really don't. You know, social media is fast-paced, but everything is fast-paced.
Everything is, yeah.
Everything.
Yeah, yeah. There's very few opportunities there's not many areas where we are encouraged
mm-hmm.
to do anything mindfully or slowly.
Yeah.
Or intentionally.
Especially in, like, American culture.
Mm-hmm.
Think about, like, our workplace culture.
Yeah.
It's
achievement.
Live to work, not work to live.
Right. Oh, so exhausting.
Yeah, and that we're working forever. For what? You know, a lot of times we're missing life.
Yeah.
We're missing opportunities to mm-hmm. just enjoy the moment. Because
mm-hmm.
I think,
mm-hmm.
again, the American work ethic is work yourself to death.
Mm-hmm.
There's
mm-hmm.
no time to slow down in that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just go, go, go.
Yeah, that's a statistic I'd be interested to look at, of how many people have actually passed at work from the amount of stress that they're under.
Oh, yeah.
Oof. Anecdotally, I know of one. It was a man in his 50s that was in a sales job, and it was such high stress that he literally had a heart attack at his desk and died.
Yeah.
And they didn't find him for a full day.
Oh, wow.
It's insane.
That is truly insane.
You're such a cog in the wheel, but people need you so much, but they don't notice that you're even gone until 24 hours later.
Yeah. So it's like, what are we doing?
What are we doing?
Which could be a whole podcast episode in and of itself.
Absolutely. Oh, so much.
Yeah, that quick pace, go, go, go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And again, the harm it causes to our mental health.
Well, we've all been programmed to believe that is what being a good worker means, is how mm-hmm. much you put out, how much you achieve, how much you can give.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not always something that can be quantifiable.
100%. You know, I think going back to the idea that there's this gray space, like
mm-hmm.
sometimes things are more subjective, like you
mm-hmm.
can't always measure that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And unfortunately, right now in the economic climate, so many people have lost their jobs or are having to work multiple jobs to survive. And when you're in that survival mode, it's even harder to be intentional about setting time aside for yourself.
Oh, absolutely. And even with going back to the social media thing, thinking mm-hmm. about people who have been actively impacted by these adverse things,
mm-hmm.
of still getting met with resistance, or that maybe the news isn't as true as people are making it out to be, or mm-hmm. you still see that polarization in the media when things are actively happening.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, like you were talking about, like, with many people getting fired recently, there was a huge layoff in the national park system, and
right.
I'm a huge advocate for nature, and so that's yes. heartbreaking.
It is.
But seeing people protest, you know, mm-hmm. once a year in Yosemite, mm-hmm. the big waterfall turns, like, red almost
uh-huh.
In February because of the way the sun hits it.
Right.
And park rangers hung the flag upside down as a sign of protest, because that means, like, the country's in distress.
Yeah.
And to one side, you know, that might perpetuate a certain narrative, and for another side, they're like, oh, they're just being snowflakes, or this isn't as big of a deal as they're making it out to be.
Sure.
And both sides, there's truth in both sides.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of being able to navigate that.
Yeah, and discriminate facts from fiction.
Yeah. And it's challenging even when it, like, transcends facts, but, like, that the moral or ethical things.
Mm-hmm.
It's damn near impossible to change somebody's personal convictions.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, even with the example of the national parks, that the way to understand what is happening now is to listen to the experiences of the people going through it.
Yeah.
I think that is so important, that it's easy to kind of brush something off as just, I don't know, something that feels far away.
Yeah, if it's not directly impacting me, then why should I pay attention to it? Why should I listen
yeah.
to it?
Yeah.
And I think going back to, like, we're all people. This is our country.
Yeah.
Like, we should all be tuning into this.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you have a different viewpoint. And it's still important to hear your fellow Americans.
Yeah, yeah. Agreed. And I know we're going to do a whole episode on queer folks and talking about trans folks as far as misinformation, but that's also an opportunity to center the voices of people who are actually experiencing living the life as a trans person and the hate that they face constantly, and understanding just how difficult their lives are.
Absolutely. And I mean, the trans population in general is such a small population in our country, and yet they're one of the most targeted.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's crazy.
Yeah.
And kind of back to the idea that, oh, that isn't my life, it's not relevant to me, I'm not going to pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of harm in that.
Because so much harm in that.
Even though 1% doesn't seem like a lot, that's still millions and millions and millions of people
mm-hmm.
who are facing discrimination, who are getting hated on from, you know, workplaces, from the administration that runs our government.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The protections for them and a lot of other people are being systematically rolled back very quickly.
Yeah. And it's sometimes hard to find that middle ground when those things are happening.
Yeah.
Of your sense of validation, confirmation of, oh, this side is bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're the opposing side.
Right.
And, you know, things like this happen where vulnerable populations are getting targeted.
Mm-hmm.
DEI gets rolled back. All sorts of honestly crazy things to happen in 2025.
Right. In America, typically, we're looking at ways to give people more rights.
Yeah.
Is the way that I always viewed our democracy, is that we are looking how to make life better for everyone.
Mm-hmm. And when that's not the reality of what you're seeing, it creates this huge cognitive dissonance. Like, you feel it in your core of, like, something doesn't feel right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how much does that go back into fear and feeling uncertain and scared?
Yeah. And then you find comfort in the news sources that you do get on social media,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
of whether you're for or against the things that are happening in this country.
Yeah.
You seek it out for validation and
mm-hmm.
clarity.
Mm-hmm.
And a sense of comfort that, okay, there are still people like me.
Right.
There are people who believe in the things that I do.
Yeah. Yeah. I've wondered recently with, touched on RFK Jr. briefly earlier with antidepressants. He also has stoked this fear of the medical industry and vaccines specifically.
Oh, yeah.
Which feels really scary. And, you know, that became a huge issue during COVID because so many people were fearful during the pandemic, understandably so. And then so many people said, well, this vaccine came out so quickly. How do I know I can trust it?
Mm-hmm.
So there started to be a lot of mistrust in the medical community, and specifically with vaccines.
Yeah, and it's heartbreaking because, again, these are things that have been meticulously tested and researched and evaluated before they were put on market, before they're like, this is safe for human use.
Right.
And sure, every medication comes with side effects. Totally. Not everything's going to interact with people, and a large majority of it is safe for the vast majority of people.
Yeah.
You can't discredit anything.
Can't discredit decades of research for long-standing vaccines.
Yeah.
Because something feels scary.
Yeah. It doesn't change the truthfulness about the situation.
It doesn't.
And you see that in that there's like a shift in, like you said, that fear, especially with the vaccines.
Yeah.
Like, we're seeing it in Texas right now. Like, people who have chosen not to vaccinate against things like the measles.
Mm-hmm.
There's the largest measles outbreak in Texas in over, I think it was like 30 years.
Yeah.
150 cases plus. A child has died.
And hearing that, right? I know I hear that information from my news sources. But it also makes me wonder, what does it look like from someone who has an opposing viewpoint to me, what their news sources might look like.
Yeah.
What are they saying?
Yeah, and it's hard, right? And that, again, the importance of trying to seek out that other information, but sometimes we don't even know how, and I think even us, like, we both see that in our own stuff of, like, okay, like, what even does the other side see? Like, what do they, what are they consuming, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And being curious about that instead of critical or judgmental is extremely challenging.
Yeah.
And it can be truly transformative.
Yeah, yeah. I'm definitely guilty of that, of feeling like, well, I've read all of these things. I know that this is true.
Yeah.
What do you mean you're telling me otherwise?
Yeah, it makes you feel a little crazy.
Yeah.
When somebody is so, like, staunch in the belief that what you're saying isn't true, or that you haven't looked at the research or whatever it is, that research isn't true, that it's fake.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How do you approach that person with compassion?
Right, right.
It's a real challenge.
It is a real challenge. And I think trying to approach someone from understanding their place of fear.
Yeah.
Right. I do my best when I am trying to have a conversation with somebody who has an opposing view of mine of, okay, just kind of like you said earlier, you've gone through a lot of life situations to get to where you are. There's a reason that you believe what you believe. I want to try and understand the fear, the emotion, what you've been through to get you to this point.
Yeah.
But even that's really hard.
It is. Especially when people you know or yourself, like, there's impacts on the misinformation that's being spread.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to the trans community, I have plenty of trans people in my life, and watching them struggle is really hard.
It's really hard
to feel that compassion or that sense of understanding to somebody who thinks those people shouldn't exist.
Right.
That they should be kicked out of the military.
Mm-hmm.
That they shouldn't be allowed to play in sports that align with their gender. And yet that's the way forward of being able to find that middle ground with people who are also open to finding that middle ground.
Right.
The unfortunate reality is some people are going to be closed off.
Right.
And that you have to pick your battles.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an important point, too, of choosing your battles. Like, trying to have a conversation and discourse with somebody in a healthy way. But what do you do when it doesn't go well. That, all right, people start yelling, you can tell that they're closed off, what then?
Yeah, it can be really tempting to continue to try to nail home the point. And all that does is lead to frustration and anger on both sides at that point. Hey, like, I recognize we're in different spots. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to move anywhere as far as our beliefs. Mm-mm. And call it a day.
Right.
Of being able to move on when you identify that this is maybe not a good place for change and intentional conversation.
Right.
And to not take it personally as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's a challenge, especially when maybe that person's beliefs or, you know, what they're talking about directly impacts you as a person.
Yeah, absolutely. Disclosure, I feel that way about some of the vaccine misinformation right now, that I am a person with an autoimmune disease, and I cannot get vaccines that are live. So it's really scary for me that, yeah, I got all these things as a kid, but my immune system is in a place now that it's not great. I am on a medication that helps me survive every day, but it puts me in a very comfortable position, and that's really scary just moving through the world every day.
Oh, absolutely. And that there are people who don't necessarily take that into consideration, that there are reasons outside of yourself to be vaccinated or to take just an extra step in understanding whether you're for or against something and the impacts it has on other people.
Right.
Because it's more than, oh, this thing is, like, fake, or that it's not helpful.
Or it's the pharmaceutical industry pushing this thing because they make so much money from it. Yeah. And that's why they've pushed this for decades.
Yeah, it's like, yes, the pharmaceutical industry does profit,
and
it has kept people safe and alive.
Yeah. When I think about the pharmaceutical industry, and sure, they make a lot of money, and they do a lot of things that aren't great.
Mm-hmm.
We know this. We are in the midst still of a fentanyl crisis, and that began with the medical industry and pharmaceuticals. I understand that. But also, you have to consider the gazillion different researchers and physicians who spend their entire lives dedicated to helping people and to solving issues and to eradicating disease. So something like measles right now, that it's coming back with full force when it was all but eradicated in our country for decades, is wild.
It truly is. And I think that's a good point, too, of misinformation also places a lot of distrust in not only the government, which has been the big thing, but, like, other things, like researchers, doctors. People don't trust anyone.
No.
And it's like, what are you supposed to do with that when
there's
just this big sense of mistrust?
Yeah.
And that misinformation almost, like, equates to mistrust. Like, who can I trust? Like, what is real?
Right. I'm trying to imagine the perspective of someone who feels that way, that you feel very mistrustful of everything because you're not sure what to believe at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to envision what it might be like for that person who feels overwhelmed and like they can't trust anybody. That feels really scary and isolating too.
Yeah, 100%. And I think being able to identify those things brings up some of that compassion of, okay, we don't see eye to eye on a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
It could cause a lot of problems if we start talking about. And I can recognize some of the places you're coming from.
Yeah.
Of, it would be really terrifying to not believe in physicians or researchers, to think that some big, you know, ominous thing is happening.
So that's an area where, if you are trying to approach some of those conversations, that trying to envision, and as the old adage goes, put yourself in someone else's shoes, trying to envision what they might be feeling. That, yeah, I definitely don't agree with the things that you're saying. I don't understand being anti-vaccine or being anti-medicine. But trying to understand, how did you get here and how did you become so mistrustful? Did something happen to you? Did you have a reaction to a vaccine? Do you know someone who had medical issues and something went wrong? Okay, I can understand that.
Yeah.
Let me connect with this person on that.
Yeah, and I think even a point of being able to connect on that, but being able to connect on that outside of social media, yeah, where it's face-to-face.
Right, right. Yeah, how much different is communicating in a comment section with someone you'll never meet versus talking to your aunt at Christmas?
Yeah, because a lot of what we, like a lot of our convictions come from those in-person anecdotes and the stories that... Mm-hmm. Humans are meaning-making machines, and we're storytellers by nature.
Yeah.
And so stories are appealing to us. Mm-hmm. And I think it makes a lot bigger of an impact when you're face-to-face with the person telling you that they're being discriminated against, that they're being targeted, that their rights are literally being taken away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's easy to hop on Instagram and see somebody's story and be like, oh, another one of these whatevers, versus recognizing the person behind that.
Right. Right? Absolutely. Absolutely. It's so hard to find a middle ground sometimes. It really is.
Impossible at times.
Impossible. Impossible. Mm-hmm. Oh, talk about the cost of fake news. What does that look like for people?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of what we've talked about, that there's real-world implications that people are living in, at times, false realities of things that just are not true, that people have this increased sense of fear and uncertainty, that certain populations are getting targeted, that, I don't know, it's just, I mean, there's real harm across the board when people are constantly taking in this misinformation. Mm-hmm. And not being able to assess whether it's true or not.
Yeah, that it's hard for them to discriminate between truth or maybe things that aren't quite as true and figure out what actually might be reality.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to judge reality is so different for every single person,
too.
But trying to understand where facts lie.
Yeah, and I think going back to that idea of taking breaks, intentional breaks from social media, could be helpful for that. Because, again, not only is it news overload, it's just information overload constantly. All the notifications, all of somebody tagged you on something.
Yeah.
Hey, this video seems like it's relevant to you. The For You page, you know, everything is overwhelming. It overstimulates us all the time.
Yeah.
And so if we give ourselves that break, we give ourselves a little bit more tolerance to being able to engage critically with things, you know, I think that would make a real difference for us all.
Yeah. That's a great point. Yeah. One of the biggest takeaways today for me is thinking about being intentional before I open social media.
100%. Not only being intentional, but being able to just ask, like, okay, is this part of a pattern? Is this the only thing I'm seeing?
Yeah.
Am I seeing other sources?
Yeah. And what am I feeling?
Yeah, what am I feeling?
Both, but I think we talked about before logging onto social media or clicking the app, but also it might be important as well to when you log off. Oof, what am I left with feeling? Yeah. Am I left feeling happy? Am I left feeling with a sense of dread or impending doom?
Yeah.
Okay, what do I do with this now?
Yeah. And if it becomes a pattern where, okay, I'm noticing every single time I get done with Instagram or I hop off of TikTok, I'm feeling really shitty. I feel this impending sense of dread.
Yeah.
I feel hopeless. Is this really what you want for yourself? Is this productive for your life? Is this helpful for you moving forward? Chances are probably not.
Probably not, yeah. Yeah.
Finding a balance. Like, sure, sometimes it's really important to feel that sense of intensity because it can be a call to action.
Sure.
And when you're feeling that 24/7,
you're paralyzed.
It paralyzes you.
Yeah, yeah.
So again, that gray space. You gotta find a balance for everything.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is as black and white as it seems.
Yeah.
It's not saying completely get rid of social media.
No.
And it's also don't be on it all the time.
Right.
There's that balance.
Right. And that self-monitoring piece is so hard.
It is. especially when the world is so stressful.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah, I just want to hop on social media and not talk to people, not go do anything. I can just lay in bed and move my finger up, and I just get new content. So easy.
So low energy. Yeah. You don't have to exert very much energy.
Yeah. So finding ways to curb that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, something I like doing is if I notice myself starting to doom scroll, I'll literally give myself 3 seconds and then stand up. Okay. And then usually that's disruptive enough of like, okay, like I've changed what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Then I can choose to go do something else.
Yeah.
If I choose to lay back down and start scrolling again, that's an entirely different issue. I can check in with myself.
Right.
But literally just taking a quick second to physically change what you're doing sometimes can be enough to be like, okay, like we're done doom scrolling. We're doing something else.
Yeah. Yeah. Or even something like, so the app you mentioned earlier, or also setting a timer for yourself.
Yes.
Like, all right, I'm not going to let myself sit here and do this for longer than the next 5 minutes, 20 minutes, however much time that you feel like you need to spend interacting with content. But before you start, set a timer and say, all right, I'm only going to do this for this long, and then get back to doing literally anything else.
Literally anything else. But yeah, I think that's a good point too, because sometimes people get this sense of FOMO or that they're missing out on important news or important current events.
Sure.
So yeah, like absolutely check in on it and set an intentional amount of time that you're going to be looking at this every day. We don't need to be seeing it constantly.
Yeah.
We're not made to take in this information all the time.
We're not. We're not. Our brains truly cannot handle it.
Yeah.
It can't.
It can't.
It's too much. It's all too much.
It really is.
Okay. Anything else you feel like is important to talk about misinformation and how it is relevant to us right now?
Yeah, I mean, in so many ways. Obviously, social media is like the big one because we're all on social media,
right?
All the time. But it creeps in on other areas too. And I think being able to just take 2 seconds for any sort of news you hear of, okay, what do I feel and think about this? Is there something that could be, is there another explanation?
Being more critical.
I think at the end of the day, it's mindfulness and critical thinking.
Well, mindfulness is so much so opposite of capitalist beliefs and the way that our 100% society functions.
They don't want you to be mindful.
Yeah, it's an act truly of revolution to engage in some sort of mindfulness.
It is.
And I think when a lot of people think about mindfulness, they think about laying down in the quiet for an hour and trying to meditate. That can be mindfulness, sure, and but that's not the full story.
There are so many other ways to be mindful.
Yeah, yeah. How would you describe mindfulness?
Literally anything that engages you in the present moment.
Yeah, yeah.
So absolutely. It could be anything. It could be laying down. It could be listening to upbeat music. It could be, you know, having a little dance in your kitchen.
Yeah.
It could be going on a walk. You know, adding an extra step to that. I have clients go on color walks where they focus on a color. Okay, like, I'm going to go on this walk for 10 minutes and I'm only going to focus on the color yellow.
Yeah.
Hey, you just were mindful for 10 minutes. And I think a goal about mindfulness, too, isn't that you aren't distracted, because distractions pop up.
Right.
Our brains do that. Yes. Like, we can't.
They're unfortunately meant to do that.
Yeah, they are meant to do that.
Yeah.
It's that ability to navigate back to the current moment.
Yeah. Yeah,
regardless of those, because it's going to happen.
Absolutely. And recognizing that's not, like you said, it's not a failure.
Yeah.
You have not failed mindfulness because your mind wandered. Yeah. It's going to happen.
It is a distinct feature of our brain.
It is. It is. That damn prefrontal cortex always wanting to think about things.
Yeah. So we're all going to think things. And can I turn my attention back towards the present moment? Maybe you have to do it a lot of times in the brief.
Yeah.
You know, mindfulness exercise, and that's okay. There's no wrong way to do it, as long as that willingness to turn back to the present moment is there.
Right, right. And that's exactly why it's called exercise.
Yeah.
It is your brain exercising, making intentional choices to steer back to where you started.
And like exercise, the more you do it, the easier it becomes.
Indeed. Indeed. Yeah.
So, yeah, I like thinking about those things. It's like desire paths, you know, like those little dirt paths and like green spaces.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing when we're mindful or we're engaging critically or we're, you know, going against what's so automatic for us is we're intentionally creating new neural networks. And when we're intentional with it and we keep up with it, you know, eventually that becomes our default. It's no longer the mindless doom scrolling that we do. Sometimes we'll still do it.
Sure. Sure.
And we'll be more intentional about it.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll be quicker to hop off it. Maybe we'll be able to cue in a little faster.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my favorite ways to describe that to people is that imagine that you're out walking through a forest and that when you're first starting practicing mindfulness, it feels like there's so many distractions. There's so many things in your way. There's tall grass, there's trees, there's limbs, there's giant rocks and boulders all in your way. But gradually, as you keep going and you are practicing mindfulness and trying to forge another path, so you're using mindfulness. Mindfulness is like having super strength or having a machete to help you clear your way. Mm-hmm. Every time you use that tool, you're clearing a path to make it easier. So eventually, it can take a while to clear all of that. But when you make that clear path, like you said, that is the new neural network that is easier to forge and go forward.
Yeah. It's just that willingness to keep up with it at the beginning. Because it's a lot of hard work to do that.
It's really easy to get discouraged, too. And life feels overwhelming.
Yeah. And the payoff is so rewarding.
It is.
Oftentimes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, like, this path is here for me now.
Yeah.
Like, my brain can just choose to take it.
Yep.
Yeah. I can choose to take it.
Yep.
And there's, like, a real sense of empowerment in that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Empowering those brains.
It's what we're all about.
It is. Making those choices. Okay. All right. Anything else that feels important for misinformation in social media today, Zoe?
I don't think so. I think we covered all the big ones. Okay. Obviously, we're going to have a couple of other episodes on misinformation and various topics. You know, I think our next one is going to be cults.
Which
I'm personally excited for.
Me too.
I think there's a lot of misinformation when it comes to, you know, cult-like mentalities.
Yeah.
And especially some of the stuff that we've been seeing in our country over the past several years.
Yeah.
Very relevant.
And unfortunately, it's a pretty clear lane from the misinformation that we talked about today and how it ties into cult mentalities and how it feeds that.
Totally.
I'm looking forward to talking about that one.
Me too. All
right. Thank you guys for listening, and we will see you next week.
All right. See ya.